Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the Rob County check sheet for November 20th, 2018. Don't actually have the cycle date printed on the check approval sheet, but there it is. Just not paying attention. Cycle date, November 12th through November 16th, accounts payable checks, $53,716.88. Payroll checks, $483,866.04. And IRS and state income tax wires in the amount of $193,829.71. For total disbursements approved of $731,412.63.
Second.
Items, anybody have any items? No.
I've got a few. And this is for the checks on the run date of the 19th. So payment to Alpine Aggregates, LLC, for $9,911.59. Public Works Gravel for County Roads 14 and 36. Two payments related to the Funk Pit gravel production. One to the State Board of Land Commissioners, $1,980, and one to CWH Properties LLC for $3,300. Those are both for October production. Payment to CSU Extension, I highlight this just because of the budget discussion we had, which was related to how we supplement pay for the two agents that operate out of the Extension office. This is a payment of $7,991.67 for fourth quarter supplemental pay. Payment to Colorado Northwestern Community College of $5,556.59 for Buell-funded first impressions tuition and fees for seven individuals. Chandler Asset Management, a payment of
$1,000. Was that a grant, or what was that?
I think it's an ongoing grant program, but I can determine or find out more if there's questions to how that's done, if it's a grant or if it's...
Yeah, I guess that was grants to providers? I mean, or
it was grants to individuals.
We paid to the Northwest Community College.
We paid to the community college for their tuition and fees for the students.
For providers, for... Okay.
I think it may be, but I didn't recognize the names, so I'd have to verify that. There were seven individuals.
That's fine. That's probably capacity building.
Okay. Chandler Asset Management, $1,480.57 for October 2018 monthly payments. Colorado Energy Systems, $36,533.20 for the wind turbine and batteries for the Farwell communication site. Douglas Colony Group, which is $1,304.73. This is roof inspection and repair at the Justice Center. We talked about that yesterday.
They performed repairs?
There were small punctures, I guess, around. It was quite the invoice. It had pictures and all kinds of things.
$1,300?
$1,300. Little small punctures.
Can't get a plumber to show up at my house for $1,300.
Is that hail damage or what?
I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess there had been a complaint about leaks, and so they went
and
found it.
Yeah, I got that yesterday, too.
Yeah, I just don't know if that was, you know.
What was described yesterday sounded like a big deal, so $1,300 sounds like not a big deal.
Well, I think there may be more coming, other repairs that need to happen. I think these are just patches. An Elon charge to Canine Guardian, $1,845, which is purchase of a bite suit for, I guess, the dogs to bite, presumably not biting
for
the dogs.
For training purposes?
Training purposes, yes.
Murray is really slobbery.
Maybe they needed a new one. Town of Hayden building permits. So this is a payment of $864.54, just highlighting the fact that there was activity there to the town in October. One permit, but there was
activity. That's money that we collected then?
That's a payment to them that we collected on their behalf, yeah.
Less the 2% treasurer's fees, probably.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Land title guarantee company, $400,000. This is payment for PDR Project 186, the Flanders Ranch. UMB Bank and Trust, $56,416.25. This is the payoff for West Route County Library District. A payment to Uray Sportswear LLC of $17,586.35. This is order of clothing for the Tailwinds General Store.
I thought that was $17,000 for all the
for swag. This is for us to sell. That's why I wanted to note it. It was not for county employees unless they go buy it. Giovanni Construction, a payment of $78,067.53 for RV park and pedestrian improvements phase two at the fairgrounds. Powder River Construction, payment of $644,587.02 YVRA terminal expansion project payment. And then the last one on my list is Runbeck Election Services, $26,190.02. For printing and preparation of ballots.
Any other questions, comments? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Aye. Items of note from yesterday, so we had our work sessions. We met with the assistant county manager, had a legal update, had a public works update with the public works director. With CSU Extension Office, Yampa Valley Regional Airport, and that's basically that's the amount of it.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve consent agenda items A through C, noting that item B is a resolution 2018-077.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And get going with our 11 o'clock item here with Mike Morty, Roden Bridge.
Good morning.
We're talking about the Green Trust Bridge.
Yes. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm here to get approval of the Chair's signature on two grant applications to the Special Highways Committee via Colorado Counties, Inc. One for the Green Trust Bridge for additional funding and one for the Moon Hill Bridge. Back in 2014, the county was awarded a grant for the Green Trust Bridge in the amount of $861,320. Then that bridge went under design, and in 2016, the bridge came back with the engineer's opinion cost of $994,775. The county is asking CCI, or this the Special Highways Committee, for an additional $163,450 in the construction funds. This grant, this bridge is currently out to bid, and the bid opening will happen on the 27th for the bridge. And then the second one is a request for a grant to replace the Moon Hill Bridge off of County Road 56. We submitted this grant last year as well, and we were denied for that grant. And that grant is in the amount of $1.375 million for that. Both grants have been reviewed by the Grant Review Committee. Tom sent a memo out for that. The Grant Review Committee supports the submission of these grants for both of these projects.
Questions?
Nope.
All right.
Good to me. So I guess the question, how likely or unlikely is the additional amount? I mean, that's the critical thing.
You know, I've been really successful. I've been successful, really is a strong word to say, but I've been successful with gaining additional monies from the Special Highways Committee in some of these incremental. I did it for Butler Creek Bridge twice. And once for the Green Pike Bridge, and you know, I'm not asking for a ton additional. I mean, I've already been granted the $800,000 for the bridge, and to have the extra 163. I mean, they have $2.8 million to grant for the calls projects for 2019 to 2022. So I feel that the Green Trust Bridge is probably a better, and I also put it as our first priority grant fund over the Moon Hill Bridge, because this will be the last one where I still have allocated funds on the books with the feds. So I think once we get done and through with this bridge, then I kind of go back, and then I can start applying for the one over by Creek Ranch and Moon Hill Bridge one as well. I mean, the Moon Hill Bridge one, if they awarded me $1.3 million, I've eaten up half their allocation for the year that they would do for that. So I think, not to mention Green Trust Bridge, it's out for bid right now. So that's one thing. When I had the conversation with them last year when they were reviewing our grants,
Eric Bergman?
With Eric, well, he was with the whole grant review committee, and I was on a conference call, and they were asking me, and I said, they're driving pile today, so they know that it's going to get spent. Knowing that it's out to bid, they know that it's going to get spent too. So that's why I have pretty good confidence that we'll be awarded that. It's happened in the past.
Yep, sounds good.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve your signature on the grant application of the Special Highways Committee via Colorado Counties Incorporated for $163,455 in additional construction funds for the replacement of the Green Trust Bridge, 80% grant, $130,764, and 20% county match, $32,691. I also move to approve your signature on the grant application to the Special Highways Committee via Colorado Counties, Inc. for replacement of the Moon Hill Bridge, requesting funding in an amount of $1,375,500, including 80% grant, $1,100,400, and 20% county match, $275,100.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Awesome. Off.
Thank you.
Morning.
Okay, we're here for our 11:15 item, Yampa Valley Regional Airport waiver request for the security camera update. Julie?
Yes, and Kevin.
Kevin's here.
Is joining
well.
Us. So,
good timing.
Perfect timing.
Yes.
We're here to request the Board of County Commissioners to waive the formal purchasing process and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to VTI Security for security camera updates and bag belt card readers installation at Yampa Valley Regional Airport in the amount of $34,359.33. The history behind this is that VTI Security installed the security camera system at YVEA in 2016. They did a site visit in July of 2018 for the additional cameras.
That's, by the way, YVRA versus EA.
Oh, I'm sorry. Regional Airport. Sorry about that. For the additional cameras that were budgeted for installation, unfortunately, the negotiations have taken up until last week. So we've asked for a waiver of the formal purchasing process so that we can complete this before the planes start arriving in mid-December.
What are bag belt card readers?
So as a separate project, we installed electrically operated bag belt doors on our primary mainline bag belt this summer, and they're operated with a security
badge.
There were always doors there, right? Yeah, they were manually operated. So on one, on the other one it had badge operated, so we've made them both. From a security standpoint, this is much better.
Okay.
And as you know, if you're standing in a bag belt and a door is left open,
so
it's more likely with
secure area than not.
Yep. You're on the flight line.
Yep.
You can just duck down and walk right out, and you're on the flight line. So this was fixing a known shortfall. So we installed the doors, and then this is the...
And then we're adding additional security cameras?
We are. So we're adding two additional security cameras to the two exit and entry plazas in the parking lot. So that's where a lot of transactions happen and where a lot of problems are. So we want to be able to see people at those locations. And we're replacing six cameras that VTI provided previously that aren't compatible with the new server we bought last year. And so those six cameras were operating off an old server, which was no longer supportable. And so we're buying new cameras that can work off our new server and replacing the old ones. And we're adding a camera at the new Gate 1 location.
Love technology upgrades.
Well, and we're, like I mentioned yesterday, we're kind of married to VTI security at this point. And to make it work with the system, there are one and only suppliers.
And you've got the money to pay for this.
We do.
From four different locations, or budgeted. So we're within budget.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we waive the formal purchasing process and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to VTI Security for security camera updates and bag belt card readers installation at Yampa Valley Regional Airport in the amount of $34,359.33.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
See.
Tell Harriet hi for me.
I will.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not very controversial.
Well, we'll see about that.
Yeah, right? Just the stuff here?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so the first thing is the...
So we'll go on record here. So we'll start up here. We have in our 11:30 item, and that's the capacity building grants for the Museum and Heritage Advisory Fund Board. So, Pete, yeah, you can take it off.
Please. Yeah, the first item that we discussed was the funding for the capacity building grant towards the Tread of Pioneers oral history transcription, and this is the phase four of that project. That's been quite a good success, and we recommended that you approve that.
In their presentation, they discussed that, I don't think this will necessarily be the final phase, but they're getting nearer to the end of the recordings that they have available to transcribe. So at some point, this will wrap up.
Did they hire a subcontractor?
They did. And they said it was extremely efficient and accurate compared to trying to have volunteers do all their transcribing.
Right. So basically what they do is they send their recordings to these guys, and then they put it on digitally, which is, I guess, some kind of a pretty difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm.
Well, they transcribe.
They transcribe
into from voice into words.
Right. Exactly.
But they have probably have some software that.
That's
helps.
What they use. Yeah.
And then this stuff is these transcriptions are available online. Somewhere.
Online, that's right. So anytime, like if you
want. Through the Tread of Pioneers website.
Or? Yep.
And they do a portion on the library website where they did the Rewire Winter digitization project, so it can all come together in one place so people can access all of the information. It's searchable then.
Yeah.
So we probably ought to have three motions on this, so we can go ahead and have a motion on this.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve funding of $5,000 from the Capacity Building Grant Fund towards the Tread of Pioneers Oral History Transcription Phase 4 project.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Okay.
And then the next one was a funding of $5,178 from the Capacity Building Grant Fund towards the Hayden Heritage Center. And this is for their collection storage and stewardship project. And they've done a lot of work on their museum, and this is taking that to the next step, basically, I guess is the easiest way to say that. their storage area has not been up to museum standards, and this will get them a lot closer to that.
I see the pictures.
Yeah.
So the total project's $10,356.
It's like correct reconstruction.
So this is the MOCAP funding portion. The 50% is the in-kind.
Or they're actually putting cash in there too.
Yeah,
some of their own cash.
They've got some 4,000
donations.
Yeah,
they went. They had a consultant come through and look at what their best storage solutions would be as far as climate control to keep all their materials and artifacts safe. And moisture, and what type of materials they would need in order to properly store the things that they have and archive. So from that consultant report, this is the idea that they've come up with. There's one particular location in the museum in the depot.
Yep.
Depot. Where it's the temperature remains the most consistent throughout the year. The moisture level is the most suitable. It gives them more space that they can organize and actually access these things.
You want to keep going, Tim?
Actually, why don't you do the next one?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we approve funding of $5,178 from the Capacity Building Grant Fund towards the Hayden Heritage Center Collection, Storage, and Stewardship Project.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And then last one's Oak
Creek. Oak Creek, they are asking for $400 or $800, and we approved it for the Capacity Building Grant Fund towards the Historical Society of Oak Creek and Phippsburg Archive Support Project.
So this one's similar. So they are also looking for materials for storage. They, too, have a lot of photographs. They have some like textile materials that they're storing, they have them stored inappropriately right now, where they're just not going to withstand the test of time if they're kept in like.
Well, the last time they were in here having a discussion, they had a big problem with the basement.
Moisture, yeah. So I think this is all kind of, you know, they're trying to find ways to better store the items that they do have when they're not on display. So, and Laurel from Hayden Heritage Center and then Mita from Tracks and Trails are in discussion because a lot of these materials and archiving boxes that are used for historic photographs or for textile materials are really expensive to ship. So they're going to try and go in on an order together to save on some shipping costs because they're getting some really similar items, although Hayden Heritage Center is getting shelving and stuff. Mita's grant request for Tracks and Trails is more boxes and like the file sleeves for photos and stuff.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve funding of $800 from the Capacity Building Grant Fund towards the Historical Society of Oak Creek and Phippsburg Archive Support Project.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay,
and just as an aside, there's about $45,000 left in the fund that has.
Is this after the 10-9 or is it before the
10-9? Before that.
So there'll be 34 roughly.
Yeah, roughly that.
And that's what was left rollover for previous years.
Right, and as you know, if it's not used, then it just rolls into the next year.
Right, yeah.
And all of the museum entities are aware that the mill levy is going to go down, so they're preparing for that.
Cool. Because
based on Gallagher, I guess.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, of course, on Oak Creek, the mine is pulled. They're a lot different taxing situation out there.
Yeah, I think
so. Typically, the MOFAP's been collecting $10,000 or $11,000 a year off the mill levy. I mean, it sounds like it if you dispense $10,000 or $11,000 and the reserve stays.
Actually,
it's
quite a bit more than that, but that's what's available for this grant process.
So the big hit was on the direct funding that went to each of those.
Yeah,
Oak Creek.
Oak Creek over the past 8 years has gone from like $27,000 annually to like $17,000.
Yeah.
So theirs has gone down, and so they've had some issues figuring out how to make that money stretch in their operations. But they've done really well and fundraised. And, yeah. I mean, they've been really resilient. But, I mean, they're all pretty conservative in how they budget. budget and find other funding sources.
It's still better than nothing.
It's yes. better than
it's
nothing.
It's a lot better, for sure. Yeah, and they're very, very thankful for that.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. Cool. So the other question I had then for Tignus is, are we getting all the grants closed up? I mean, all the entities doing a good job of getting... We have any problems
yes.
out there?
We had a few that were lingering for a while that closed up just before this meeting in October, and that was they were interpretive sign projects, and a couple entities went in together to order these interpretive signs from one manufacturer because it was going to be a better deal. Most manufacturers shut down partway through the process and wasn't able to deliver the product. So those, they had to find a new manufacturer. So those ones were lingering for a little bit, but they've since closed. Now everybody's up to date.
And so you've got the grants. All the grants are closed. The new ones will be the only ones that we have
There are previous ones because they have 2 years to complete it.
Extensions on a couple of them.
So there are some. There was one that requested an extension, but it was with Tracks and Trails, and they're within their timeline still. So everybody's still... good within their timeline. There's nobody who's passed their 2 years that hasn't requested an extension.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's what we want to hear.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, nobody's out there floating around.
Sometimes we have to threaten to lower the boom on them if they don't keep to task. So.
Definitely.
Have you guys heard the song Colorado You're Calling that they write about in there?
No, Nita. I know Nita put it in her narrative.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Kickoff for our 1:30 agenda item. Actually, we don't really have, I mean, we have an invite here to Chris Middledorf with the Colorado Parks and Wildlife. So I think all you people came to see us, which is fine. Glad you came. Chris, we'll turn the floor over to you.
Well, thanks, commissioners. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. Carrie asked me to be able to provide you a presentation that I've shown at the Steamboat Trails Alliance probably 5 or 6 months ago. It's ever evolving. I showed it at Keep Route Wild, the conservation group that recently formed, and just trying to get information out about trail development, about any development, human disturbance, and how it impacts wildlife populations. As you know, our agency is charged with conservation and protection of wildlife for current and future generations, and at the same time, providing premier outdoor recreation. And in that strategic plan, those can almost feel like they're contradictory or competing with one another, those statements. But I think it's very important that we have places for people to enjoy the outdoors, where they have that compass point being a trailhead and getting out there. But we need to do so in a sustainable and responsible fashion. So we've been engaged with the Forest Service. Well, I've only been here since September of 2016, so certainly CPW has been working with the Forest Service for forever. But on the Mad Creek Rabbit Ears Trail proposal, I think we started discussing some of the basics probably in early 2017. And then CPW provided formal comments to the Mad to that proposal in January. I know I've shared that with you as well. And so we continue to have conversations about potential impacts to wildlife and how can we mitigate, avoid, or minimize those things. So I'll get started on this presentation. I know a lot of folks in the audience have seen this before, and hopefully some new people too. But this is obviously Rowell County on the left-hand side, Jackson County on the right-hand side. The reason I show that is that I'm the area wildlife manager, and I manage all the wildlife operations in those two counties. I have 9 other employees, 7 officers, and 2 wildlife technicians. And, quite the area. And we have some awesome resources, whether it be on private land, public land, mountains, sagebrush. We have a great variety of species across that landscape. And it's my duty to make sure that we protect that.
So does your boundary actually float in with the boundaries of Route and Jackson then?
Yeah, I have both of that, yes.
And that's where your boundary's in?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm one of 5 area wildlife managers in the Northwest region.
Right.
So we have 18 total area wildlife managers in the state. And then the district wildlife managers break that. You can see those purple lines up there. I think it says a laser on it.
It does.
Yeah, like this is the district right here. Justin Pollock. This is Jack Taylor. Kyle Bond. Adam Gerstenberger. Jacob Way. And Josh Dilley. They break those into districts. But we... those boundary lines, you know, for land use comments, when the county says, hey, we're going to do a subdivision, or those guys will deal with that, or the game damage for agriculture. But we don't use those lines that they can't cross. I mean, those guys work across boundaries. So that's our field operations. And then, of course, we have Steamboat Lake State Park in Rouse County, the Yampa River, and Stagecoach, and then really the biggest state park in the entire system is right there, State Forest. So just a little bit on boundary lines there for me. What I want to talk about is disturbance of wildlife. And I think the background of all of this really comes from conservation, and I've been trying to take this word back. Unfortunately, I think over the past couple decades, conservation has been used in the, as a term almost like preservation or for environmentalism. But conservation is really Theodore Roosevelt coining the term with Gifford Pinchot, who's the, you know, the first director of the Forest Service, as conservation being the wise use and multiple use of our resources. And I think that's really important to hear that, is that I'm not a preservationist. We don't believe in the national park system of not doing something with the land. The land is meant to be used. We need to do so wisely. And it's getting harder and harder to do that as we have more and more people on the landscape. Whether it's recreation or homes and businesses, it's difficult to use that land wisely, but we must. And over here in Rouse County, as you can see, we have mining, you know, rich farming, ranch community, public land grazing. I can't remember the numbers. I really shouldn't misquote it being on the record, but it's well into tens of thousands of sheep that I think are in the Bears Ears Hans Peak Ranger District. I want to say 30,000, but it may be incorrect. That's a lot of mouths to feed, along with, you know, 20,000 elk and the deer and everything else. So a lot of competing interests. And then, of course, we have premier outdoor recreation here in the county. Hiking, fishing, hunting, biking, snowmobiles, skiing, etc. And it's year-round. And then, of course, we have our residents, our businesses. And then the ski area, which is a very important amenity and economic driver in the county and the city, and their expansion that happened recently as well. So there's some factors that we want to consider when wildlife's ability to survive on this landscape. And number one is habitat. And habitat loss is the biggest threat to wildlife worldwide. The cumulative impacts also include fragmentation of that landscape. I mean, imagine if you take this three-ring binder, Doug, and you have five animals across this, and you just cut that in half and make the other side less effective. These animals can't just move over to the other place and sustain themselves on that, because that habitat only can sustain so many animals. And that fragmentation happens quite a bit. So we look at disturbance and habitat loss on a landscape scale. Where are the impacts throughout the year? You know, some species are not in the mountains in the wintertime, so it's great to have snowmobiling. It doesn't have an impact on certain species, but for other species that utilize the high mountains when the snowmobile season, there are impacts. What life cycles are affected? I'll get into quite the conversation about recruitment and productivity of a herd. Herds, I think the most important thing we need to look at is for productivity is recruitment. That's the ability to take a calf through that first year of life, especially that first 4 to 5 months when they rely heavily on their mother. And then how many mouths can the lamb provide for? I've heard people say, well, the animals will just go somewhere else, you know, if we develop. And they don't. They don't just go somewhere else. The land can only hold so many animals. This map is of our DAUs. We're now calling these herd management plans. These are the herds throughout Colorado for elk. And we're up here in the north in E2. It's made up of seven game management units. Game management units are what we use to kind of control where people are. And those are the different hunting licenses for game management units. But we don't expect there to be a tremendous amount of immigration of our elk out of this geographic boundary. Here's Craig, Steamboat, getting to Moffat County, Elkhead Mountains, Mount Zirkle Wilderness, and then down here around town. And the reason I bring this up, it'll come back to how these animals utilize the landscape, and that you have migratory animals that go all the way from Steamboat Springs clear over into Moffat County. That's a tremendous migration. And the resources they need for winter range, the resources they need for summer, and, of course, for production. That's a little bit of a close-up here. Here's Craig, Steamboat. This is Game Management Unit 14, which is closest to us right now, or where we're sitting right now. And then Game Management Unit 214, along the Elk River Corridor. get into this a little bit more about cow-calf ratios, number of calves per 100 cows, which is a way for us to look at the productivity of a herd, or at least how well it's doing, and compare it to some of these other game management units. So really, no trails is not reality. And whether it was 5,000 years ago or 150 years ago, there have always been trails, whether they're made by animals or made by man. And there will continue to be trails, but hopefully we can find places to put them that are responsible and sustainable. Here's just a little bit more of a close-up. What I want to show here in this picture for folks is that, I mean, Steamboat's pretty well developed. Over the last 125 years, you know, this used to be winter range. I mean, these animals probably were in here quite a bit. Now you have homes all the way up to the side of the hill. I know Jim Hicks, who happens to be in the audience tonight, is a former CPW or Division Wildlife Biologist and District Wildlife Manager, and he was involved in the sanctuary property that has been divided. And, of course, that pushes even higher up on the hillsides. So there has been some habitat loss over the past century, changing that landscape, the ski area. And I'm not going to ever put any responsibility of this on agriculture production, but certainly when you change that landscape, it can change the distribution of animals and how they use it. So trail development. I mean, trails are integral, and I said this before. They connect people to the outdoors. I mean, a lot of folks are good with a compass and a map, but really I would say the majority of people who try to get outside, they really don't go on just a walkabout. They need trails, and they need connections. And I think it's really important for this to be an opportunity to educate and inspire these folks, especially when they're coming from places where they're not outdoors. They don't live in the setting that we live in. They come from Denver, where you have 2.5 million people, and that growing population is going to be a huge voting populace. They're going to have influence on what we do here in Ralph County. They're going to have influence on what we do at CPW. And I need to make sure that we connect those people to the outdoors so they understand the heritage and the joy and have a respect for wildlife and understand what conservation is. And again, diverse activities for all user groups. You'll never hear me say bike trails. There certainly are bike trails in town that are specific, but I think it's only one or two. Everything else is multi-use. And that's what I need to do for CPW is make sure that it's multiple uses and that everybody has that opportunity. Another big thing for us is economic benefit to local communities and businesses. I mean, certainly CPW is funded by fishing and hunting licenses and some federal aid monies. So hunting and fishing is very important. But hunting is the primary method and tool that we use for managing healthy populations in Colorado. But at the same time, there's opportunity for us to work with you, county commissioners, with city council, and try to find other ways of improving or, I should say improving, but looking at the economic inputs into our county. And it doesn't all have to be hunting. But, of course, all this comes with displacement and disruption of ecological communities and associated wildlife. There is no argument to that. Humans have a disturbance on a landscape. There are peer-reviewed studies, many and many of them, that show the behavioral costs, the energetic costs that go with human disturbance. So what we have to do when we look at trails is what are these impacts of wildlife? First off, we have to look at the type, the intensity, and the seasonality of human use. I mean, if we can avoid building trails in time frames where animals, you know, are not going to be affected, that'd be wonderful. The intensity, too. I mean, it's one thing to have one person per day going down the trail versus 10,000. And, of course, seasonality. I mentioned the winter versus the summer. And, of course, the species present and sensitivity. Some animals have, you know, different responses. There are certain bird species that have no problem, the American robin, with having more disturbance. They actually favor it. But a lot of species don't. And, of course, the energetic cost, and that gets back to that productivity. If you're a cow elk and you're trying to raise a calf, I'm going to make up a number, but you need 2 million calories to do that through that year. And every time that you're trying to, you know, that calf is trying to get milk, that they're trying to do something, and there's disturbance and you have to flush, you have to run, those are calories that you normally would have conserved, and it would help you get through the wintertime. Or you would have been able to give to your young. And that's my biggest concern here is what are those energetic costs? Do these animals have refuge and time for breaks to actually raise their young? And I mentioned that in that last statement there. So when we did the Bad Creek, the Rabbit Ears Trail Proposal on a formal pre-scoping for the NEPA process, We took just four studies, and there, again, are multiple studies out there. And these are two mule deer studies and two elk studies. And basically, to summarize their findings is that these animals avoid trails where there are human beings, and they stay away. The distance can vary depending on the species. The distance can vary depending on the study. And there are some studies that show a much greater distance, up to 800 meters, where animals will avoid trail use. So what I did from this study is I took the four different avoidance areas and I averaged them out. This is somewhat of a subjective way of taking science or taking some empirical evidence, but I didn't want to cherry pick the biggest number or take the smallest one. You know, I try to be balanced in my approach, knowing that there are people who may not agree with the statements that I'm making, so I didn't want to go with 400 meters. So fair enough, though, it is possible that elk avoid or have a higher probability to avoid anything within 400 yards. This is a map of the former Proposal A or Proposal B. I guess actually there's still the formal proposals that came out in the pre-scoping NEPA. The blue lines are from Proposal B, the purple lines are Proposal A, and all the red lines are existing trails, not motorized, existing non-motorized trails that we have within this project area.
Say that again. What did you say again?
So the red ones, Doug, are non-motorized trails that currently exist within the project area of the Mad Creek Riders Trail Proposal.
Okay.
It doesn't show over here on Emerald Mountain some of the other trails. And actually, I think it's important for me to probably put those up there to show cumulative effects, like how much. And then the distances you see off of these trails is that buffer that I applied of 295 meters on each side. So approximately 600 meters in the thickness across this line. And what you see here is the beginning of that fragmentation of the landscape. We have the ski area, Mad Creek. This is the Buffalo Pass Trail system, Soda Mountain, and then Highway 40. And this is the, I think, is sometimes alluded to as Walden Rim. But you start to build these little islands. And I'm not sure how effective those habitats are. I mean, if you have it surrounded by trails, if they happen to be used, you know, is that effective habitat? We know from some of these studies that I've shown you that obviously around the trails, it's not. So that's quite a bit of fragmentation. You know, and I understand the purpose of Gun Creek Trail. This is a trail that's proposed, connects Mad Creek to Buffalo Pass, and potentially you have this very long connection all the way back to Highway 40. I mean, that's something that I think a lot of recreational users may enjoy. But at the same time, it comes at a cost. This trail bisects across the Mad Creek, Colorado roadless area and fragments that area. And there's some unique habitat in there for not just elk, but multiple species. So how do we mitigate, avoid, or minimize that disruption if that trail is built? One thing I asked for during this proposal was to try to keep development concentrated close to existing highways and roads and infrastructure. But again, you're still adding more disturbance. Even if you ask for a quarter mile, well, if we build a quarter mile off the road, then it's another 300 meters off of that that is disturbed. So that's just an idea of how much we already have on the landscape and what is proposed for the future. This is just a picture of the Buffalo Pass Trail system. Right now, I believe that they're in the final stages of building, I think it's a Soda Mountain, and then Buffalo Mountain. And actually, CPW provided $243,000 for the building of these trails. They were approved through the NEPA process, and CPW generally supported the Buffalo Pass Trail system. My predecessor, Jim Haskins, was the area wildlife manager at the time. And with that approval, when the State Trails Program received grant applications for those two trails that were outside of the Steamboat Trails Alliance proposal that cannot be paid for by 2A money, we built those trails or paid for it. And I think it's important to note, too, that I can't...
Hunting? I mean, that's out of...
No, it's not. It's out of Greater Outdoors Colorado.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's your GOCO money that you get.
Yeah, and we manage that system. And so we have... We've spent $102 million in trail development across the state.
Yeah.
And I make that... I emphasize that point so people... You know, I think there's always not an attack on CPW, but the Division of Wildlife being an obstructionist organization that does not want trail development. And I think it's hard to be called an obstructionist when you've built $102 million worth of trails. This here is a trail density map with proposals A, B, and all existing development. This includes miles. Okay, this is a miles of Forest Service road and trails per square mile. I didn't put this in our comments, and I may include it next time. But you really get to see the density. The darker the colors, the greater the density of road and trails. So, you know, pretty expansive on a landscape scale going from Mag Creek all the way down to Highway 40. These are the existing trails. I'll go through these fairly quickly. Ski area, Buffalo Pass, Mag Creek, Continental Divide. They get up into the circles here, Mag Creek. And then we overlay these new trails. This is some of the proposed development in Mag Creek. If we go back here, you know, there's this island around Rocky Peak. I understand that there's a trail called, I believe it's the MRP Trail, that goes across. It's a, be careful with my choice of words, it's a social trail that was not formally authorized to be built. And that is a potential one that could be built. I think this is it here. So, you know, I'd like to minimize the fragmentation in Rocky Peak and in that Mag Creek area. There's already a lot of use, and I think there's a good way of having a one continuous trail that goes around the entire system but not bisecting all of it. And then again, we come down to the No Buffalo Pass trail system, the ski area. One thing about the ski area is the expansion. There's no proposed new formal summer recreation, but as you develop that, I think people will be more likely to use some of those runs that come in. So we're looking at some habitat alteration there. This just shows Highway 40 looking to the northeast. Here's North Park, Highway 40, the Walton Rim, ski area, Buffalo Pass, Mag Creek. Just trying to give people some perspective. You know, for elk specifically, this is very important for production. That is, again, when you give birth to your young and raising that animal through its, you know, first 4 months or so, and then also summering range. I would say 10 years ago you wouldn't hear CPW talk much about summer concentration areas. You'd hear more about critical winter range or severe winter range, but you know, we've lost those,
like calving,
right, calving lands, production areas, and I think we haven't changed our tune, but a lot of the winter range is not in great shape, or it's gone, or it's marginal. Production areas are very important, but now we're also starting to concentrate on summer concentration areas. Summer range, when you map out summer range for elk, it's the whole entire map. But these concentration areas where they're going to summer between, I think it's July and end of August, it's very important for them to get those extra calories. And that's where a lot of the trails that we want to build are. Buffalo Pass, Mag Creek, and you can see here this is the potentially proposed Gun Creek Trail. The one thing that I've done with the Forest Service, sitting down with them before even the pre-scoping, was discuss the alignment of this trail. This is Proposal B in blue, Proposal A in purple. And I made the recommendation that they move to lower in elevation so they minimize the amount of fragmentation of the Mag Creek road, Colorado roadless area. But recognize that I'm putting it at a lower elevation where it may impact elk production and calving. And with that, I asked for the mitigation of closures on the trail. That trail would not be utilized between April 15th and June 15th. I might even try to extend that a little bit further just because we are seeing calving occurring even after June 15th. The problem with closures is you have to have funding to maintain them. And I have seen some problems with the Flash of Gold Trail that has been built on the Buffalo Pass Trail system that went through a production area, where it's not enforced, and people do violate that closure. Not a great number of people, but with the cameras that have been set up, and I plan on doing that this year, this fall, is setting up cameras in the forest and to see what people are doing when we have something closed. And it's very hard for me to support building a trail that I think is wonderful for the connection between two geographic areas if we can't protect the wildlife that the closure is meant for. And so it becomes harder to support. And I certainly am looking to the Forest Service and the city for money, for ways of funding law enforcement. And I'll get into that towards the end. This here is Walton Rim, Storm Mountain Ranch, Alpine Mountain Ranch, ski area, and then Highway 40. This is Proposal B in blue again. So from this analysis, right now existing disturbance, if we use that buffer of approximately 295 meters on each side, there's 33,000 acres that are affected. And then if we add Proposal A and Proposal B, we get to affected acres increasing quite a bit. 14,000 total new acres for Proposal A and 10,000 for Proposal B. So I get a little bit more into, I don't call it a science, but wildlife management and what we do and how we understand how productive our herds are. This is classification data when Jeff Yost, our terrestrial biologist, along with our district wildlife managers, fly usually in late December, early January, and they'll count all the elk that they see along the steamboat front, up into Unit 214, up in the Elk River Corridor, over on Emerald Mountain. And here we just count bulls, cows, calves, spikes, you know, year-old bulls, and we classify them.
And when does that happen?
It happens in late December, early January.
You guys fly to do that yet?
We do. We contract with a helicopter, and we fly.
Yep.
So it's not a census. You know, we can't count every single animal, but obviously the larger our sample size, the better. I'll get more into this here in a moment. This is a really interesting map to show the...
What's the color dot? It's the year.
The year. The year. This is a really interesting map. This is mule deer that were captured, several dozen, by our terrestrial biologist and Meeker named Darby Finley and the guys over at Area 6. They caught them up here north of Craig, let them go. And these are just the animal movements. Again, you see a cluster of dots down here, say around Muddy Pass. That's not 20 animals. That might be just one or two. But it's amazing to see an animal that is going over to Grand County, over Muddy Pass, over the top of our mountains here, where the Walton Rim is, around the ski area, around the north side of town, all the way through. And I mean, it's incredible. I mean, these movements up into Wyoming. That tells you something, is, you know, like migration corridors, another very important feature that should be protected and conserved. So I mentioned cow-calf ratios. E2, with all of those game management units, there are seven of them. The aggregate of the cow-calf ratios shows this right here, which is about 55 to almost 60 calves per 100 cows. That's fantastic. I mean, that is a healthy herd. There is no doubt about it. This is the healthiest herd in Colorado. And then we go here and we look at this. This is in, let me go here. This is 86 to 2017. So I got a pretty good sample size here.
Stable. And again, how do you monitor? How do you figure that one?
Every year we go out and we fly and we count the number of calves per 100 cows.
Oh, okay.
And the
so
different same classification.
December when
yep.
you're flying, mm-hmm. counting, you're counting calves.
Yep.
You're counting the number, the ratio.
Yep.
Okay.
And then here's in game management units 14 and 214. And my sample size is smaller, 2006 to 2016. And you see a trend here. I mean, this is linear regression, just putting a line to this trend. Obviously, we have years where things are up. Something happened here. This would be this winter of 07. That was a pretty good winter, I think, wasn't it? You know, the hard winter. So there are other environmental factors that play into it. But I start seeing this trend line, and I'm asking the question, why is this happening? Why are in these two game management units do we see a declining cow-calf ratio, but we see this in the entire herd management plan, or the DAU, the data analysis unit? And I don't think that I can hypothesize that it's any one thing. I think that it's the cumulative disturbance of humans in the landscape, which includes recreation as well. I think we need to start being thoughtful about it. Why do you have the healthiest herd in Colorado doing so well, but then in two of the southern game management units, if we were to overlap all the trails, all the recreation, all of the ag production, all of the homes and businesses, could possibly be related. And we need to learn more about this. And one thing we're doing right now is working with our research department in Fort Collins. We'll be starting this next spring. We have a recruitment study that is going to occur in the Roaring Fork area and then also up here at E2. The north part of E2, we are going to be the control where we have the healthy population versus the treatment, which is going to be the Roaring Fork in Eagle County. It's going to be a massive camera study. Cameras have never really been used to estimate abundance or density, but there's some new novel techniques coming out of Montana on doing that. So we'll have some camera plots that will have several hundred cameras across our mountains. But we might have up to upwards of 1,000 cameras next summer in our hills. The other study we'll be doing in E2 over closer to Steamboat right here in our foothills is some treatments and controls with recreation. Again, a camera study to see how are those animals utilizing the landscape with recreation. Some of the units will be considered a control right now, or sampling frames will be a control right now because there's nothing there. But if the Mag Creek Ravagers proposal moves forward and some trails are built, that would then become our treatment. This is another interesting map that I think folks just need to pay attention to statewide. Whether you hunt or not, this is something that we at CPW are really looking hard at. And you notice down here in southern Colorado, all these data analysis units, again, herds, have these lower cow-calf ratios, you know, 26, 30, 31. It's not until you get into the darker green do you start getting to that 45 to 51. And really, I mean, a healthy herd with 40 calves per 100 cows is good. This is not a bad calf ratio, but I look at the trajectory and ask what's going on, and I don't want to be like this. I want to keep it green like that. And as we start moving north across Colorado, we can see some of the other DAUs getting more and more green. But obviously in Eagle County and Roaring Fork Valley, we have some troubling things occurring. I believe this year, last year, we reduced the number of cow tags, rifle seasons, to the minimum number allowed by law. So in our regulations, we have to maintain at least 10 licenses per hunt code. But for all the rifle seasons, we basically remove cow hunting because people are not seeing cows in that area, Picken County. There's also conversations and concerns about archery hunting and looking at removing either sex archery tags where you have the choice between a bull and a cow. So these are some pretty concerning things, especially when, I'm not going to say just elk, all, you know, mule deer, pronghorn, black bear, all the licensed species provide to our funding resources. But when someone comes to Colorado from Pennsylvania, the amount of money they spend to get here, and then they pay $650 for a license, that's truly funding the conservation of the other, you know, 959 species we have in this state. And I think people need to understand that it's not, I'm not here in a business of game management so that we have hunting to make money. I'm in the business of game management so that we can have conservation, because that's the model that was designed for North America over 100 years ago. It's a very effective model. So again, like cow-calf ratios, just something for us to be looking at. And I think, I'm not trying to send alarm bells up by any means, but I think we need to have a future look 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the road. I mean, some of us in this room won't be here anymore. A lot of us will be getting really old. But I think that's what it's about, to maintain this resource for future generations. And the economic development from that, too. I mean, wildlife viewing, hunting, and fishing are huge economic drivers within this county. And I think people just, I want to belabor the point, tend to look at the next day in their calendar. They don't look at what maybe 2050 is going to look like. And I know in county planning and city planning, we try to look 20, 30 years in the future, and that's what we should be doing when we look at development, especially with wildlife in mind. My suggestion, I shouldn't say should be. This, again, is the DAU, just if you need a little idea of geography, Unit 3 being on the far west and Unit 14 being on the far east. It's a fascinating map that shows all the trails in Colorado. You know, everybody says we need more trails. I look at that map and go, that's a lot of trails. It's not the typical rectangle we have in Colorado. We cut off part of the eastern part of the state. There's not much public land. But that's a lot of red. In our comments, I made some suggestions and recommendations. One was a conditional use policy. This is closures implemented if somebody violates the closure, and you have more of a, I'm sorry, conditional use policy is when the expected use goes beyond what you intended. And let's say an illegal trail is developed off of a trail that they built. or somebody's violating a closure. And then you can close that trail down if it's violated. I had somebody bring this up to me in a community who said, well, what if you have a person who doesn't want a trail? Couldn't they go out there and violate that conditional use policy and get it closed? And I'm like, you know, that's true. But social pressure was the idea behind conditional use policies, knowing that law enforcement is minimal. And to be clear, the CPW does not enforce federal regulations, and that's, we get that question quite often, why don't we enforce these closures? There are recommendations that we gave to the Forest Service that they formalized through a record of decision and said that they would be the ones to do that.
And we know the Forest Service is so well-funded as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Ty Bricker, it covers, you know, the Yampa Ranger District up here as well, and the Bears Ears, and there's a lot of work over at North Park, and it's tough. Absolutely. Closures, we talked about that, law enforcement, needs to be funded and supported by the community. Habitat improvement projects. If you're going to create habitat loss or you're going to degrade habitat through development, I think it's important also to improve other habitats to make them of higher quality. I'll get into a little bit. I'm not sure. Are we on a time frame, Carrie? Do I need to?
I think we're supposed to finish by 2:15. But
okay, I'll get through this quickly. I got a few more minutes. I've received some criticism about habitat improvement for trail development or for development. Well, development's going to occur. You know, Green Gray, the homes, the Steamboat 700, it's probably going to occur. There will probably be more development in our county over the next 20, 30 years, so we need to also do habitat improvement. That benefits the greatest number of species. And, of course, I've already talked about developing locations that avoid critical habitat and then concentrate development versus fragmentation. So this last year, I worked with Chad Stewart, former district ranger, and Winnie Della Quadri with the city, and we developed the Wildlife Habitat Improvement Local District Fund. And this is managed through the Yampa Valley Community Foundation. It's very similar to the Trail Maintenance Endowment Fund. In our pre-scoping comments, I didn't have this fund in place. I alluded to that we were trying to work on this, but I believe that if we are going to develop trails that go through habitat, which they will, if they're going to degrade habitat based on the activities that will be on them or degrade animals, that we should pay it forward and that the cost of trail development should also include habitat improvement. The 2A funds cannot be used for habitat improvement. They're meant for trails. If this was an associated cost of the trail development, for instance, the Forest Service, let's make an example of Gun Creek Trail. It costs $200,000 to put the shovels in the ground. You could add an additional cost to that of the habitat improvement, and that is something that the 2A could potentially pay for. But it's not just for development. It's also, I mean, for when we have development to get money into this fund, it's also a private donation account as well. Just a tool and mechanism to improve and enhance wildlife habitat in areas critical for survival. And I really like to hit this one. You know, some people don't like fluff, but I do. A philosophy that recognizes the importance of connecting people with the outdoors and how human activity and development have an impact on our natural resources. We really just need to say, I have an impact. I love the outdoors. I love hunting. I love fishing. I love being out there. I love biking. I love everything being out there, but I have an impact. And this fund is meant to say, you know, I'll pay it forward. I recognize I have an impact, and we need to do something about it. We need to be stewards of our lands. You know, you look at the ranching and farming in this community, it's been here for well over 100 years, and how they've been the stewards of their lands. Well, we have the same responsibility of our public lands. It's only in Ralph County. We debated boundary lines for this fund, you know, whether it should be my area or it should include Moffitt County. We want it to be in our community, but also to include our rural areas. Long-term planning. So this fund, again, we get interest off of it every year. It'd be about 4.5%. So if you had $1 million in this fund, you could potentially do about $40,000 worth of habitat. Meant to benefit the greatest number of species. And it goes in perpetuity. So once we get it to a place, it will always be there. It's not where you get a donation from a developer and they say, hey, here's $25,000 that you spend one time. It can be used forever. I think what's nice, too, is we have the full spectrum of our land managers and also two members of the general public who will be on this committee that will make the advice, will advise where the money should go, the same as Trail Maintenance Endowment Fund. This is just a quick summary slide. You know, this is where we live, what we value, the impact of our footprint, and how can we mitigate and minimize our impacts. I think we need to go back to this a bit, and there's a lot of people questioning science, and I have a hard time with that. Scientific model's been around quite a long time. You know, we've done studies that are repeatable, replicatable to random. You know, we have very well-educated people working on these studies, and what we're finding is that humans have an impact on our landscape. And I think that people need to go back and trust, and hopefully I can facilitate that trust to CPW to know that what we're saying is the truth. You know, certainly I want people to question us. That's okay. But some people, I've heard in recently that, you know, someone will say, I saw a deer or an elk in my backyard. And, you know, that's awesome. I'm glad you did. But that means that everything's healthy. And like one observation does not tell you how well something is functioning. And I think it's very important for people to understand science and how we gather facts. And then stewardship is something everyone can be involved in. I mean, that is an absolute. We need to do that. This is a fun little poster that we put together, the WHILD. And this fund is getting going. I think we'll have a couple of donors here very soon. And hopefully it'll be a fund that we can use into the future. So with that said, that really concludes my presentation. I made multiple tangents there. I just think we need to be thoughtful and question some of the stuff that we're doing so that we can have these resources for the future. But at the same time, not taking the chance of crippling economic development either. I mean, they're competing with each other, but I think it's important that we have a balance. Wise use and multiple use of those resources. Thank you. Commissioners, do you have any questions? Or
no, thank you for coming and giving this presentation. And I just, we've been having conversations about the role of the commissioners in the Mad Rabbit. And I think that the commissioners should be involved. And, half of our county of the 2,400 square miles is public lands, and the other half is private, but under the mostly jurisdiction of the county commissioners. And growing up in Moffat County, I was always really proud of the elk herds over there. I knew that people came from all over the world to hunt over there, and that's a pretty striking map when you put up the entire state and where the dark green and everything else is yellow. So I hope you guys continue to choose to weigh in on the issue.
My boss, J.T. Romanski, is the Northwest Regional Manager. He and I have a real shared belief that the strongest government body is the Board of County Commissioners. Obviously, legislators have influence, city council.
Somebody schooled him right. Then.
Is that right? And it's like, wow, look at this guy up here, kissing up to the commissioners. But it is true. I mean, you have great influence. I mean, you know what's happening in your county and with your communities and with your citizens and with your natural resources. And we do look to you for guidance and direction. And we listen to what you say. That's CPW.
Any comments?
So number one, I appreciate the CPW and their focus on science. I've had the opportunity to spend some time with some of your biologists looking at sage-grouse populations, and I've really been amazed at the depth and the robust nature of the science. And I think we, as commissioners, for some time have really relied upon CPW to give us good advice about what's appropriate. And we've certainly used CPW recommendations when we've issued SUPs for oil and gas permits, including timing restrictions or activities. So, I think that's a really good thing. And I think that we trust CPW and CPW scientists to give us good information. Having said that, I've got a couple of questions. Do you actually have the ability, or does CPW have the ability to create models that can predict what the diminution of elk populations would be in light of a certain activity?
No, not based on a certain activity. We can model populations with, the demographics of sex ratios and with calf-cow ratios by changing licenses. We can model that. We could model a population with a declining cow-calf ratio, where I could go into that spreadsheet and I could change the numbers and then need to know what my response would be as a manager of that population, what I'd do with licenses. But no, to model specific activities.
Okay.
No.
I was just curious. And then, a lot of the mapping that you showed was north of Highway 40 and north and east of Highway 40. So what about the flat tops? How's their elk population doing? And is there much transmission of elk population between the flat tops and on the Wallen Divide?
I think there probably is some movement, small number of animals, and I don't have evidence to show with the GPS collar. I mean, we recently had a moose that walked all the way from the ski area to the flat tops. I don't want to get the number wrong. I want to say it's E7. E6 and E7, you know, these are fairly well-functioning populations.
I can't see that from here. You got your pointer?
I do.
Okay.
E6 and E7. There have been some changes on the flat tops. Talking to the folks who've been here a long time, CPW, former employees and current, who said that elk do not use the flat tops, the tops, as much as they used to. And that could be a variety of factors. I'm certain that recreation has increased, but I think there's a limited number of trail development because it is a wilderness area.
If I was going to sit down with you, if you were king, and we could take a map of Brown County and identify some places that you, would you be able to identify places that you thought would be more appropriate for trail development than, say, these Mad Rabbit and Gun Creek?
I think there's some level of subjectivity to what is better.
Better in terms of just...
Right. No, absolutely. You know, Tim, I have within my team folks who could look at this on the landscape level to include all of, let's say, the E2 herd. And I think there are some trails that are part of this proposal that are a good idea, to have a trail that continues to loop all the way around Dumont Lake versus having to walk through, you know, the bushes. I think there's some trail development that could be positive. Do I think that some of the trails are going to have an impact and could be significant? Absolutely. I think they should be built elsewhere. But I do think that most any trail development, unless it's right here along Lincoln Avenue, is going to have an impact. And I went out with the group Route County Riders back in June, and Kent Foster with the Forest Service, and a lot of talk about this area called Ferndale, which is just north of Highway 40. Let's see if I can pull up the map here.
There it was.
Yeah. There's this corner right here that almost gets surrounded by the highway on three sides. Really two. Let's just call it two sides. And a lot of dense trail development. Certainly we had a big concern about this trail. I mentioned concerns about this long trail that goes on a ridge here. I think McInnes Creek's on the other side of that. But I suggest that we use this quarter-mile distance off the highway to build trails, to use the old highway grade. I mean, it's a road that used to be there. We should use something that's there. There are a fair number of folks who like to hunt in this area, who I think would be concerned about animal displacement. I think there are people even within my team who would not like to see trail development in that area. I don't have any mapped or known production. I will not say that it does not exist. I think next year we're going to do an exhaustive production survey looking at production areas. I'm sure that there are elk in the area, but that might be a place. And the reason why I say so is because I think you have this highway corridor here where people are coming in and out of town. I think you have economic development if you can do something with a special use permit boundary. I've made the suggestion during this field trip that basically just below West Summit, there's this ridge that you can go to the top of a hill mountain here and then down to the actual old Ferndale picnic area. In that geographic area to do high-density trail development, I would recommend a special use permit. I would like it to be tended to with an entity such as Route County Riders or something similar who has to have liability insurance. I'd like it to have beginner to double advanced every single thing that they
drive
want.
Drive to it and then off to
right.
Access it off the
highway.
The pass.
I'd like to have, you know, a campground, picnic area, and I'd like to have CPW's name on it. It says CPW's Ultimate Bike Park for Colorado. It's premier outdoor recreation. and that we would look to the State Trails Program for money to help fund it along with 2A. And it would come in conflict with what a lot of folks think about conservation. But with that, I would ask this question. We don't need this. We don't need any of this. Let's just do one big thing where we get all of the trails that we want. It's just a suggestion that I've made. I don't know if that's right or wrong. But I think when I'm not going to say we piecemeal stuff, but here we have this bike park here on the ski area. We have and hiking. We have hiking and biking up here. And then we have it over here. We're just, you know, kind of picking apart the landscape. And so what are we missing here? And that's what I've been asking the community, Tim, is what are we missing? And I haven't heard much from the people who hike. They seem fairly content. The hunting community as well. I'm not saying that they're anti, they don't want any more trails, but when I talk to them, it seems like they have what they need. What I have heard from my constituents who are mountain bikers is that they don't have certain types of trails that are in advanced or even beginner class. I know we have Fiddlehead and Panorama up on Buffalo Pass, but that there needs to be some more mountain bike trails. The ski area has 12 miles remaining of trails that they can build from the NEPA that they had done over a decade ago. And I think that's the Forest Service. I can't speak for them, but that's what an SUP, especially its permanent boundary, is. It's concentrated, high-density recreation. And if they're not going to finish building those trails on the ski area, then, you know, the part of me about economic development is build some competition and have another place where we can do it. So that's a thought. But, again, that's going to have an impact, Tim. That's an important – there's some habitat features there that are important. I think there's some hydrologic features as well.
Oh, that's just what I think about some of the other popular mountain biking destinations like Moab and Fruta, that they've found lower, drier areas that are less likely to impact elk populations. And I think that that kind of terrain actually exists in different parts of Round County, certainly Moffat County.
They have elk hunting in Moab?
No, that's what I'm saying. There's not hunting in Moab, but where they're putting the trails are in places that probably don't impact elk populations.
Okay, I agree.
That's the point.
I agree with you. Okay.
But before I told you about a specific idea. I think if we the commissioners asked CPW to look at this hard, we would sit down with our recreational user groups, my subject matter experts on my team, and we would look at the landscape level of Rouse County, which would include some of Moffat because of our game management units and DAUs that go outside of those political boundaries, and see what would be acceptable. I know that the future holds for potential development of motorized up in the Elkhead Mountains, north of California Park. There's a lot of development potentially to come. And that's really the bread and butter of the herd is up north. I mean, that production is amazing. I have maps that show GPS collars during production timeframes up there that would just blow your mind. So I think it's a tough one. It's a tough challenge.
So I get, are you done?
I'm done.
So I have a couple comments here too. Again, I'm very concerned about the fragmentation totally across the whole board. When my dad was a kid here in, 1920, 25, there were no elk here. And we've done an exceptional job of bringing back the elk that were never here for a long time. I don't know whether we wiped them out during the initial settlement of this place, but they got wiped out, whether it was the mining or whatever, they got wiped.
Charlie Sparks took them all down to Browns Park.
Is that right?
Right at the trophy herds. Yeah,
is that right? So, man, there were no elk. In fact, my dad got his first elk ever, and he hunted every year. The deer were plentiful, but the elk were none. And he got his first elk at 40, and probably 1970. And I was a little kid there, standing 65, and there's a little kid standing next to the first elk that my family had ever gotten. So, but the fragmentation, we've done such a good job of getting a good elk herd. It would be incredible for us to trash it out as fast as we have the potential for it. If you multiply the population change, when I was a kid, it was 6,000 people in this county, and now we're looking at 24. And then if you're 24,000, and if you add on to that the number of people that were coming in on top for the recreation amenity, which is good, great, but then every little bit has that fragmentation thing. I mean, that's what's
been driving our county planning as to having one per 35 and not having subdivisions out in the middle of the county, and then also having the conservation easements that we fund and then trying to keep working landscapes for the elk and cows and whatever else too. So I guess I'm pretty concerned about the fragmentation as we move forward here too. And the next thing, I guess the bigger question I have is, you know, yeah, we do this one, and then what's tomorrow? When's the next one? And how far do we go before we get so far that we go back to when we don't have any elk, we don't have any animals, and we run them all out? And I don't know, I guess I was listening to a podcast the other day about the black bear population, and I thought it was because of the hunting situation, and this podcast was coming back. Well, no, it's not the hunting situation. The fact is they're having just way more cubs than they ever have had in the past. So I don't know, something's transforming here amongst them that's happening too. So, I mean, I used to see tons of calves, that elk calves, and they were twins too. I mean, lately there hasn't been that many twins I've been seeing too. And then if you add on to that, you know, the climate change and what that's doing to all of our habitable grass that we have, for me as my cow operation as well as the elk, I mean, the potential climate change and, you know, warming of things is making it tougher for the elk to get those fibers.
Absolutely.
And those food value that they need, for sure. So that's all I have to say too.
I appreciate it, Doug. You know, go back to the beginning of the 20th century, and nobody in this room, but, you know, extirpated the elk. I mean, we had them brought in. Jim probably checked my facts on this, but around 1910, 1918, we brought our elk back in from 11. I heard them. Bringing them down from Yellowstone to repopulate. You know, this is a plains animal that we moved into the mountains.
Yep.
And they're savvy. I mean, these are very smart creatures.
Oh, no, they are smart creatures.
You know, but it goes beyond elk, too, you know, and not just the game species, but the non-game species, birds, everything else. And I think we do need to be very mindful and thoughtful about that development over time. And we do hear the words of, you know, we have the biggest elk herds in Colorado. Colorado has the biggest elk herds. Yeah, that's a fact. You know, we do. But I don't use a population number to tell me about production and how healthy that herd is. We've modified our DAU plan, our herd management plan, and last time was in 2008, was an amendment. And I can't remember the original number. I want to say it was in the 30,000s, mid-30s, where we had the population. And for social, political, and economic reasons, we sit down with the public and have a similar process to discuss herd management, and we heard from our public. They wanted to see that herd come down. And I think it's sitting around 20,000 right now, and the objective is around 18,000. But because we're over-objective does not mean we're over-population. Like the population is just blowing up. The hard part about having an over-objective is that my job is to get it to that objective. And so is the biologist. And so through the application using of hunting licenses, I now can't use those licenses potentially where I have declining cow-calf ratios, where I might see the production decreasing. I don't know how much more I want to harvest in those game management units, so then I might need to refocus further up north. And I'd like to be able to have as many options as possible when I'm managing wildlife populations. It's like if I took half of your pastures away, or, you know, what you could utilize to rotate on. I never would compare myself to a rancher. I'm always trying to be careful with that. But I think it's a similar practice that we have.
Well, you have to build in there some safety factor, too. I mean, your margin of, you know, weather and all the other uncontrollable issues that might come up, and still have a safety factor, even if you get to your objective number that you want.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Now, with our herd management plans, we're building in ranges that give us some flexibility going up and down. But you're absolutely right. A hard winter, you can have a reduction. You know, no winter, you can have a great increase.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Chris, thanks for joining us, and I hope we can give this presentation to as many citizens as possible.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. It's good seeing you.
Yeah. Thank you all for your attendance.
Thanks for your time.
Oh, you're already on? It's already on. So we'll go get started on our 215 agenda item. This is an executive session. There's going to be a docket and pending matter review. So I acting as the chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to receive legal advice concerning county attorney pending matters listed in the litigation and claim docket. This executive session is not being electronically recorded, as the county attorney is advised that the discussion is subject to attorney-client privilege. This is an executive session for conference with the county attorney for the purposes of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions under CRS Section 24-6-402, Prince 4, Prince B. Caution each participant to confine all discussions to the stated purpose of the executive session, that no formal action may occur in the executive session. If at any point in the executive session any participant believes the discussion is going outside of the proper scope of the executive session, please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is 2:32 at this time. That would be my motion.
Second.
Any discussion? Included in the executive session will be the county attorney, staff, as well as assistant county manager and the three county commissioners. All those in favor of going to executive session, say aye.
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 Aye. That finished up with our executive session. It's right now 3:27. The following persons were present during the executive session, all the ones that we said when we were going in, including the legal staff as well as the assistant county manager. The board limited this discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal actions were taken. So with that, we're adjourned for the day.